Thank you, everyone, for joining our fireside chat with Priority Technology Holdings. Priority is a payments technology company that leverages a purpose-built platform to enable clients to collect, store, and send money, operating at scale. Priority helps its customers take and make payments while managing business and consumer operating accounts to monetize payment networks. Today, I'm pleased to introduce Tom Priori, Executive Chairman and CEO of Priority, and Tim O'Leary, CFO of Priority.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having us.
Tom, thanks for being with us today. Priority had an impressive Q1 with 21% year-over-year revenue growth and reaffirmed its full-year guidance. Can you talk a little bit about the demand environment across your businesses?
Yeah, sure. We've been fortunate to see strong demand really across our three operating segments. Unlike some of our peers in SMB payments, we've seen close to 20% volume growth, and that's really coming on the heels of winning market share. Consistency in our products being adopted by the small merchant community in the U.S., we're consistently boarding north of 5,100 merchants a month. That's up from last year as well. That segment's just kind of winning on the strength of its products. On the B2B segment, it's pretty early innings in that industry, we think generally, but we're seeing continued margin expansion in that segment. Volume is growing on our existing logos, and we're winning new contracts across the middle market and institutional space for automated payables. And then lastly, our enterprise business has really seen kind of the greatest adoption. We have a deep platform in consumer finance payments, and in the environment that that's been challenging for the consumer finance sector generally, we tend to do well, and we're doing well as a result. And then we've also seen, just in the beginning of the year alone, 18 new partners join the platform and start to move their volume through. So, Tim, I think, can go into a little bit more of the granular financial detail in each segment, but we've been fortunate that it's been broad-based.
Great. So diving into your segments, let's maybe start with the big one, SMB payments. That business grew 19% year-over-year in Q1, which is very impressive. Can you talk a little bit about what are the top drivers of growth in SMB payments and do you see any near-term headwinds just given the macroeconomic environment?
Yeah, I think the growth has been really broad-based. I think Tom's already mentioned some of the boarding trends we're seeing, and we do continue to see our distribution channels operate very effectively, right? So adding an average of over 5,000 merchants a month, right? So that continues to grow the total merchant base. So we're up over 260,000 merchants, today across the SMB portfolio, and that's driving the volume growth, right? We had volume growth, we had transaction count growth, right? And all that contributes to, what we're seeing on the revenue side, where the business continues to grow at a very nice, strong organic pace. As far as some of the headwinds, I think the broader macro, market is certainly starting to show its impact across the sector. All the rate increases from the Fed has started to impact some of the consumer spending. I think the benefit for us, though, is our portfolio is very diversified, very broad. There's really no concentrations as you think about industries. And in some ways, we've got nice defensive areas in there where we're probably less concentrated to restaurants than the broader payments industry might be, which we haven't seen the impact through there yet. And then we've got legal services and other areas that continue to be very defensive for us and growing nicely.
And maybe to put some fine tuning on that, on the current environment. Tim noted, our book is 17% in the hospitality space, which, small restaurants probably make up a third of all small businesses. So the underrepresentation there is, by the way, it's intentional. The other thing I would just note, if you look across our SMB book, close to 80% of our volume is either what you'd consider integrated or semi-integrated. We're not supporting a distribution network that is out pushing terminal solutions. These are software solutions. They leverage our MX Merchant and MX Merchant POS platform to really to manage their business. And that enables us two advantages. One, it's very sticky. Our attrition is historically below 10%, which is less than half the industry average. So we're not, you know, kind of chasing, you know, money that's leaking out of the bottom of the bucket every year. The other thing that is, you know, significant is we're selling software solutions to larger businesses. Our average customer is doing, you know, probably 30 to 35,000 of bank card volume a month. That's large within the SMB segment. So these are businesses, they need technology solutions. And we've cultivated a distribution network that understands that, is a value-added you know, group of resellers, and they do an outstanding job being consultative. And, you know, that makes a difference in difficult markets.
Very helpful. You know, maybe turning to the B2B payments business. On your last earnings call, you spoke about, you know, the evolution of the business mix, the wind down of a large managed services contract. You know, can you talk about B2B in general? Where do you see the growth opportunities, you know, in the industry and also in your business going forward?
Well, look, we've always had the view of B2B that we're still in early innings, number one, and so we've been very measured about how we've invested. As a result, we have one of the few B2B divisions that is profitable. We're driving net income to the bottom line while most of our peers are still burning capital, which, you know, we're picking our spots. And, you know, one of those spots, you know, was announced today. We are the stalking horse bidder in a restructuring of plastic, which is, we think, a really exciting B2B technology, but maybe was under-optimized for the environment. And we can now bring resources to help optimize that. Within our vision for B2B, which needs to be one that is not network-oriented, we think that's a mistake. And we think the market's proving that out. And what I mean by that is not every supplier is going to sign up to accept payment, you know, just to automate their, you know, receipt of their invoice. It's very situational. And the reason is because buyers have different deals in procurement with their suppliers. Not every network's identical. So we take more of a bespoke approach. We curate those merchant networks between the buyer and their suppliers, and we now are doing that not just with a supplier-driven automated payable solution. As we add plastic to the mix, which is a buyer-driven solution, it'll all be, you know, housed in one place. And we think that's an important part of the successful strategy in B2B. Be very bespoke-oriented, curated for big buyer and supplier networks, and you also have to have a full suite. We're not just a virtual card issuer, not just a card player. As you mentioned in the opening, we're a collect, store, and send engine. We have money transmission licenses nationwide. We handle lockboxes, any form of payment that we want to make to automate, or a buyer wants to make to automate their payables, we can handle in one place. And that's a differentiator, and we think drives our profitability and our margin, which, you know, is now, you know, approaching 70% in that business.
Yeah, well, it's great to see the announcement earlier today with plastic. Can you talk a little bit more about plastic and the strategic rationale of doing that deal? And it seems to be, you know, a lot of overlap between your SMB customers and plastic's customers.
Yeah, without question. I mean, their core constituent is small businesses that are looking to utilize their credit to improve their cash flow. And we're already an existing service provider to plastic, so this is a layup for us. But we're excited to start bringing those tools out to our SMB universe. We think, you know, it's a great cross sell opportunity for our base, and they've built really impressive technology to help small businesses manage their payables. Which complements our kind of more enterprise-oriented solution really beautifully.
Great. And maybe we could, pivot to the enterprise payment segment. Enterprise payments grew an impressive 57% in Q1, which is incredible. Can you talk about the solutions you provide in enterprise payments and some of the market tailwinds that you're seeing?
Yeah, sure. I'll let Tim dig into a little bit of the particulars on performance here as well. The growth has really been driven by a couple conditions. We have been touting this business as a countercyclical one that we felt would really do well as the economy, you know, started to turn downward. It was very intentional in us getting into the business. We've been talking about the probability of a recessionary or certainly economic pressure evolving for the better part of, 18 months to 2 years. So we endeavored to set up for it with a business that helps consumers resolve outstanding debts. And in an environment like that, like we have today, you might imagine that, that's kind of top of mind for a lot of consumers. So we've seen tremendous enrollment in that segment. And then as we've rolled out a full set of APIs for integrated partners, so these are everything from real estate software to construction software to other bill payment and payables platforms, they're now leveraging our engine to collect, store, and send money. We're getting the benefit of that growth. We have 18 new partners that have come on board since Jan 1. It's really been driven by that new partner adoption and the macroeconomic environment where we're just going to naturally see a lot more consumer enrollment through the integrated partners we have, which is now, well north of 50. So,
yeah, I think the other tailwind there is that business, it drives deposit balances, right? So we have over $600 million of deposit balances that we manage through a network of, 13 or 14 partner banks where we have those deposits in FDIC-insured accounts, and we capture interest income on the float, right? Obviously, with the tailwinds behind rates, that's really been a benefit for us, and we'll continue to see that for the benefit of this year. And then just the continued growth in new enrollments, right? We continue to add to the overall customer base there, and we really haven't seen any signs of slowing. If anything, it's accelerating.
Yeah, it's exciting. Maybe we could switch gears and talk about the competitive environment a little bit. Overall, in terms of competition, how do you think about competition in the verticals that you're in or in the segments you're in? And you talk a little bit of, any changes you've seen in the last year or so.
Yeah, look, I hate to be cute in this remark, but we really don't think about, our competitors. And that's not to be dismissive towards them. It's just that they don't drive our decision-making. We've had a vision that we felt payments and banking would converge. A lot of people call that embedded payment. We think, or embedded payments, we think it's much more than that. Modern networks are not just about, card payments any longer, right? They're commercial networks. And banking, banks do this great. They store that money for, a period of time. And allow companies to then decide how they want to manage their money, right? We felt it's only natural to add that to our breadth of offerings in the market. And I'd say that's really what we focused on from, I'll call it, the competitive landscape, is what's the evolution of how commercial networks should operate, and do we have the tools to deliver? And I think it's starting to become very clear that that modern delivery of payment solutions, and I would actually call them like cash acceleration solutions, right, which is really what we should be sort of endeavoring to do as payment companies, just requires a banking capability. It requires a banking expertise. So we brought that all together with nationwide money transmission licenses, a banking as a service capability. That's where our competitive mindset is making that a differentiated platform or engine to move money, and then plugging that in across our channels so that our customers can go to one place to have really all their money flow through their business. And when it needs to stop for a minute, it just stops with us. And they can redisposition it however they want. And, you know, we're there now. We can handle, we have managed checks. We have our own ACH Fed connection. And it's why we're driving the kind of deposit growth that we're benefiting from as well that Tim noted. Mm.
So you mentioned, you've talked a little bit about the convergence of payments and banking and embedded finance. And, you know, you've mentioned on your earnings calls that, you know, Priority is a unified commerce platform. You know, can you give us some use cases or examples of how your customers, you know, use all these capabilities and tools in the toolkit to, you know, collect money, store money, and send money?
Yeah, that's great. Well, I'll typically go in SMB to, let's reverse it, you know, make it a little interesting. So, you know, you mentioned plastic, right? So we just acquired, I told you, they're a customer. Well, you know, they're paying bills, really, on behalf of small businesses. And the benefit they provide that small business is utilizing their credit to pay the bills, use plastic to process a card transaction for all of their payables, okay? Well, that money needs to sit for a moment while it is determined, well, how does that supplier want that money? Do they want it by ACH? Do they want it by wire? Do they want it by check? Well, our engine does all of that in one place. Brings the money in on card, holds it for a moment, safely in FDIC-insured accounts, then can send out checks, send out wires, ACH, even virtual cards to the extent that that, you know, becomes a future thing within that platform, right? So all of that's, you know, handled in one area on for an ISV like Plastic. Well, we have a host of other ISVs just signing up to say, hey, I want to use that engine to do that. That's what I really want. Because right now I've got to connect to three different places to try and make that happen, and I got to send files to my bank. I don't want to do that anymore. So it becomes a much more simplified approach to moving money if I'm a, you know, if I'm in the construction industry and I need to resolve payment to a host of contractors, right? Or I'm in the, you know, real estate payments business. And not only do I need to collect from renters, but I've got a lot of things I need to do at the property to manage that property, right? Becomes a really compelling solution in that environment. That's one way. In B2B, just straight up supplier demand, well, imagine instead of having to go and reach out to every single supplier to understand how they might want to accept payment, because we have money transmission licenses and we can qualify all that information to the buyer, we can give them a payment wallet literally within minutes, thousands, tens of thousands, 100,000 of them. I've got a closed loop network. It's done. It's already built. Now it's just a matter of, hey, how do I, as part of procurement, get my supplier to accept funds in one form or another? How are we going to manage that? So it starts to enable buyers to look at their supplier networks differently, to monetize them differently. Okay. In the SMB space, it's, you know, I'd say it's kind of a pedestrian approach, really. We're already handling 90% of our customers' AR. We'll just give them a bank account that's FDIC insured. It sits on our Passport platform. They can write checks from it. They have a debit card linked from it to make payments. It's done the moment they sign up their merchant account with Priority. That is now in beta. And that will be the future. And it should be. It just makes it a lot easier for SMBs to operate. So, you know, look, it's one of the reasons why we think there's going to be a lot more competition in payments. You mentioned it from banks. I think they're starting to realize these are great potential deposit generators, and a lot of them got out of payments in the past. We think they're going to get back in. You know, your bank for one has touted it. I think very, very thoughtfully. So, if I may.
Yeah, and it's a great segue to the next question. You know, given the current banking environment, what's going on with regional community financial institutions, you know, how do you think that's going to affect the payments industry going forward? And what do you see, you know, in terms of you're going to benefit from that or competition in the future?
You know, I'll offer my thoughts and invite Tim because he's very close to many of our banking relationships, particularly as we manage deposits. We think the banking sector generally is going to start to chase payments as a business line in ways they had in the past. We're already seeing that just with the management of our deposits. You know, we control 500,000 deposit accounts. That's a pretty attractive relationship for most banks to have. So, there's competition if you think about what we're building at Priority, it's, in many regards, a virtual bank branch, right? It generates a lot of deposits that stick around for a while. So, we're looking to certainly maximize the opportunities in the current environment that are going to continue to play out over the next couple of years. Banks are going to be challenged to generate deposits and fee income. And those are two things we do really, really well. Really well. And what your thoughts are, Tim?
Yeah, I was thinking approaching it from the other side and the customer side, right? The SMB side or the B2B enterprise customer, right? Where your money sat at a bank was probably a little bit of an afterthought before, right? You weren't too worried about the deposit balances over there. Obviously, people woke up with what happened here in the last couple of months and now pay more attention to that. So if you have a different provider, right, an alternative provider like we have with, Passport and that product offering and the ability to have your deposits be syndicated across a group of larger banks where you can get FDIC insurance through the ledgering technology, right, that's an attractive alternative for a customer versus having to manage those relationships themselves and, reach out to, 5, 6, 10 banks to disperse their deposits. Now you can go to one point and have that technology, the Passport technology we have, manage that process for you, right? So I think we're seeing a lot of uplift in that when, the 18 new program managers will come on board this year. A lot of that's because of that type of technology and, the desire to have a different, service provider on the banking as a service side.
And I'm going to give you a future view of that, too. So let's say we've now created that relationship. They've got their operating account. They're utilizing Passport. Well, these are all small business owners. So you will be coming out with product that allows them to connect to a money market account or the ability to just invest in treasury bills, right, for short-term investments. Things that large companies have access to that we can very easily aggregate because we've abstracted all the complexity of setting up a bank account and virtualized all of it in a technology framework that just makes it simple for the customer. Hey, I want another Passport account, and that's my savings account, and yes, I want it to do this. Well, money just sweeps in. It gets aggregated with everybody else doing it, and off it goes to JP Morgan Investment Management, to put it to work overnight for us. That's modern commerce. That's what we see that as the evolving future, and, we're today built to facilitate that.
Got it. Maybe, Tim, this is a question for you. As we think about the capital structure of Priority, how do you prioritize, future cash flow generation? You have a lot of EBITDA, a lot of cash flow. You could pay down debt. You could do M&A. You announced an agreement today. How do you think about capital allocation priorities?
Yeah, I think it's a continual process, and we're always evaluating the best return on our capital, whether that's looking at M&A, obviously we made a decision today to invest some of our dollars in an acquisition opportunity we think is extremely attractive for our business and growing the B2B franchise. We'll also look at whether we invest those dollars internally in development. Right, we have a large development team to build new technology, new products. So we think about is it best to allocate those dollars to new products with internal development or pay down debt. Obviously, in this environment, the cost of capital is higher given the underlying interest rates. So that's an attractive opportunity as well, and we continually balance that. If you think about last quarter, we ultimately paid down our net debt with the balance of our free cash flow versus looking at M&A. I've been in this seat now for 8 months, and we've looked at a lot of different M&A opportunities, and have been pretty selective, right? I think there's a high bar in this environment to think about M&A, and does it really drive the strategy of the business? How does it fit? And I think we're seeing more and more opportunities now in this environment, too, as companies get stressed. So I think we'll have more opportunities to look at deploying capital in M&A, but we're going to continue to be diligent about managing the balance sheet effectively to make sure we've got the flexibility to capitalize on those opportunities when they're there.
And maybe this next question, I like to ask some of these questions. Tom, if you think about the next five years, what does priority look like to you? Like, what's, the vision for the business going forward?
I appreciate the question, candidly. We've hopefully it's becoming clear, like, we built this platform as one that's built to last. It's a tremendous top-line grower, bottom-line grower, kicks off free cash flow. We don't spend a lot of CapEx to maintain our technology, so it's very efficient. And we want to continue to utilize the engine that we call Passport, collect, store, and send money, into verticals where that functionality is a really important part of the value chain. So I kind of brought up a couple of them already. Look, we've started to spread investments out in construction. We think that's a complex problem that needs solving, and we're really well situated to do it. So we're going to put some attention towards that. Another one on our mind, which is probably the quagmire of all quagmires, healthcare. We haven't quite decided how we want to go about it, but, starting to drive what I'll call vertical software and payment monetization strategies across our business, leveraging the scale of the single engine that we've built. I think what we have proven out is that, and we've taken our time to do it, we've been very measured about building a single technology stack so that we don't have duplicative expense across our businesses, and we're able to operate very efficiently across business channels. Right? We have the fourth largest acquiring business, non-bank acquiring business in the U.S. We have one of the few B2B businesses that are profitable in automated payables. Right? We've got a large and growing enterprise, kind of ISV-oriented payments business, right? And all of that's happening in one place. A lot of our kind of peers who, I'll say, appear diversified have duplicated back-end technology, tremendous overlap in systems that, we don't have. So we want to continue that journey. It may be a deep one in construction or a deep one in healthcare, in other areas that interest us, like social impact and nichier segments. But it'll be, it'll become more and more verticalized.
Fantastic. What keeps you up at night, as it relates to priority? Like, what are you most concerned about, business or macro?
I don't know if I would characterize anything as keeping me, quote, up at night at this point. That wasn't probably true a couple of years ago, frankly. Say the things that continually motivate us is our tech up to the standard it needs to be to win, right? Those are the things that, I think we're constantly driving for as an organization to ensure that we're delivering a value-added solution, not something that's commoditized. I think we feel really good about the macro environment and just being able to maintain a balanced business, even in a challenging macroeconomic environment. The things that are out of our control, I'll call it, geopolitical unrest, another pandemic. Those are the things I'll say we try and just make sure we're prepared and have looked around the corners, if you will, so that we'll be able to react to them. So, you know, that occupies, I'll say, our strategic, you know, thought process at a, you know, kind of at a 1,000-foot level. There's instances like that that we just want to make sure the business is, you know, is insulated from. Mm.
Maybe we could, if there are any, I have a few more questions, but if anybody in the audience wants to ask any questions, you know, let us know. Okay. What do you think, if you think about the stock price and valuation, you know, what aspect of, you know, priority, you know, do you think investors are not fully appreciating in the company?
You want to offer your thoughts first, Tim?
Yeah,
I
think the business is probably still viewed externally as just a traditional merchant acquirer, right? When it obviously it has a lot more than that from a technology standpoint. And, you know, the question we get asked a lot is, you know, what makes, you know, priority different? And I think it is, you know, it's the technology and it's the fact that we're not burdened by, you know, 20, 30-year-old technology, you know, on mainframes and other older systems. So it's more nimble. It's something that really leads to that higher retention rate. So Tom talked about some of our, you know, attrition rates being, you know, half the industry norms. And I think a lot of that is driven by, you know, the technology platforms we have and what the, you know, our agents are using, what the merchants are using. And that's just, it's differentiating. And I don't think that's fully appreciated by the market. And then I don't think they're appreciating the balance we have in the business. So when you think about the, you know, your question about what keeps you up at night, I think a lot of people in, you know, our seat that have just a, you know, a focused business on just the payment side of it, right, they're going to be a little more stressed if the economy starts to turn down in a meaningful way. You know, we've got the counterbalance with certain parts of our business that are countercyclical, right? Our enterprise business, you know, does very well in tougher environments, and we're seeing that balance now. So I think those are the things that probably aren't fully appreciated and being reflected in the stock price. I mean, obviously the performance is what it is, and you can see the numbers in our quarterly results with strong growth and both the top line and the bottom line. But, you know, I don't think the investors have really fully appreciated the diversity of the business and the ability to survive and strive in multiple different types of environments.
And maybe one last question. This has been a topic of conversation at our conference this year, and as you think about AI or artificial intelligence, how do you think that's going to affect payments and payment technology or your business particularly? You know, maybe we're very early, but, you know, we could have an impact down the line. Have you thought, given any of that some thought?
Look, I think it's having an impact now. We use AI today as for predictive analytics on risk management. It's an extremely efficient tool because people are emotional. So, you know, it's interesting. This is like a hard example of the benefit of AI. 50% of the merchants who will leave us will do so because we held money. And over 50% of the time, the reason we did is a false positive. Right? So we could eliminate a lot of merchant angst by deploying better AI tools that guide human behavior. And so we're doing that. Okay, but that's, you know, I think that'll become a big part of the future. I think AI has a bigger impact on the expense side of technology businesses. And look at ChatGPT, and I've actually tested this with some folks at Priority, just went into ChatGPT and asked it to write an integration to MX Merchant. And it started coding and, you know, got 85% of the way there. So think about the impact of that when you're building tools and how what library of code you can create. Probably the most expensive thing in the technology business is engineers. So this, you know, provides an avenue to start to more efficiently use your engineering staff, which I think is pretty exciting.
Yeah.
I do think it'll be transformative over time. We're looking at, again, risk and, you know, how do we better utilize our resources from an expense standpoint?
We have a question in the audience.
Yeah, I can just put some, give us a little color on the economics of your $600 million flow, what the spreads are there, how that change the interest.
Well, you know, right now it's it's being invested at, you know, Fed funds, right? So so we're getting the, you know, the lion's share of that differential from Fed funds to, you know, it's called fractional expense, right? It's going to be impacted by the overall, you know, direction of rates. The benefit we have, however, is that balance continues to accumulate. And most of our relationships in that segment have a long average life, you know, close to 3 years. So they're sticky and steady. So there's, you know, the volatility that we could see in earnings is really more related to just where the overall rates are. But it's muted because the balance is very consistent.
Well, I think we're out of time. Tom and Tim, thank you so much for taking the time, and we really appreciate coming to the conference, and thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate you being here. Thank you.